It's Chris-a-mania, brother.
That's a great question. Look at you, man, with the powerful questions.
Woo!
This is the Chris Van Vliet Show. Chris Van Vliet Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Van Vliet!
Oh yeah, this is the Chris Van Vliet Show, which I guess makes me Chris Van Vliet. And yes, that's how you pronounce it, Van Vliet. I know it's spelled funny, but it's Van Vliet. So wherever and however you're listening to this, thank you for that. You guys have really been enjoying the audio-only version of these interviews on the podcast, which makes me think I should have done this a while ago, like years ago. But as the old saying goes, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now. Let that sink in. Apply that to your life in whatever way might be most applicable. This chat with TJP, or TJ Pizzle as I've been calling him, is fascinating, and you learn a lot about him that you probably had no idea about. Like how he was wrestling as a kid. He's been wrestling like for 20 years and he's 35. How he actually wasn't under contract when he won the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. A lot of good stuff. But before we get to that, the CVV show is brought to you by Green Road CBD products. And I know there's a lot of CBD companies out there, but simply put, Green Roads produces the highest quality pharmacist formulated CBD products on the market, period. They're obsessed with using only the best ingredients, which in turn gives you the best products. Green Roads has been a game changer for me in terms of helping with inflammation after the gym, with their muscle and joint relief cream, and their CBD oil really helps with stress. So use my code Chris15 to get 15% off your order at greenroadsworld.com. Chris15 for 15% off at greenroadsworld.com. Also, thanks to Samson Technologies for the pro podcasting pack that we are speaking on right now. The mics, the mic stands, the cables, the mixer, the headphones. It all makes this sound as good as it does. So check out samsontech.com to see their full lineup. And with that said, please enjoy my conversation with the very talented TJP.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate this because you just told me off camera that you haven't slept in 2 days.
No. I like your alligator move there.
This is how you sync the audio.
People don't
see on off camera.
Usually I do that and I'm like, I always think alligator.
Oh yeah. You came straight from the airport to our hotel to make this happen. You're gonna go straight from here to Starcast to sign. You're a busy man.
A poor man's rock, I think.
Okay.
Every time I make a new Instagram post or a video, I'm thinking, all right, it's like I'm like the Rock updating people on my life, except for I'm not like a billionaire. I'm probably not going to run for president someday like it.
You think Rock's going to run for president?
He should. He'd win, hands down.
He'd have your vote?
He'd have my vote. Yeah, of course.
Sure.
Just on how cool of a guy he is alone.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, after 4 years, if he tanks it, I'd be like, oh, I didn't really want to vote for him. But I would want to vote for him.
So where did you just fly in from?
I just came in from Washington. I came from Seattle. Yeah, I was up there for Prestige Wrestling. I was looking forward to that date on my schedule for a little while. And then Starcast today, which I've been looking forward to. And then my tour rolls on tomorrow to Smash Wrestling in Toronto, which is another place I've been looking forward to. It's crazy. The Indies.
My hometown.
The Indies didn't used to be like this before. I haven't been on the Indies in, 10 years maybe? 2011 or so? Like, it's almost a decade, and it didn't used to be this cool.
What changed so much with the Indies?
Well, there didn't used to be this many good people on it. Both in and out of the ring, because like everybody's really good. So that's pretty crazy. I'm learning there's a lot of new faces, and for once I'm not the young guy in the room. Mm. For 20 years I was the young guy in the room, and now I'm learning of all these really new, really good people, and everybody's like more family oriented outside of it. Like there's a lot more positivity, and it's not, it kind of used to be the Wild West, it was kind of the jungle, like guys that eat each other, like that sort of thing. And there's not that same type of competition. It's like healthy growth, I think.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of tentpole, banners to work for. There's a lot of different companies. It didn't used to be that way. I mean, you had your PWGs or Jersey All Pros and stuff kind of back in the day. And there was like one in each corner of the country, so to speak. But now it's like there, it feels like there's stuff spread all over the place, and I think it's a terrific time. It's amazing.
How much did being in WWE help you get more indie bookings?
I don't know. It's weird because like I didn't. I've been off like not doing the indies for so long. I don't know at any time if I would have taken the time to just kind of do it for 6 months or something. Because I in 2011. Or 10 or 11, I went into Lucha Libre USA. It was a show on MTV, and I did a couple seasons of that, and then straight from that I went into Ring of Honor for a year or two, and then straight from Ring of Honor to TNA for three or four years, and then I had only a few months gap before then WWE for the last 3 years. And so I don't know, at any one time if I would have stopped, like if it would have, like, because as this transition was coming out, like, yeah. I missed all of this. So I don't know if I like I would have been busy or not. I'm sure it helps out. But
you're just building momentum, too.
The thing is, though, a lot of people, like, they think of me as the wrestler I was, like, before WWE in a lot of ways. Not that, like, they tune that out. But, like, I don't get a lot of people that are, like, excited just to put the words WWE superstar on, like, a flyer. Like, they're trying to get the me that they saw in like New Japan before that wasn't around when their company started or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of a breath of fresh air because I don't take stock of myself very much. I'm not like a big fan of me. So I didn't know if like, you know, if that type of stuff mattered. And it's been so long, some of those places, like 20 years goes by so fast, and some people maybe I just thought maybe didn't know anything about my work.
But it's crazy to think we're the same age.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to think that you've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah, this will be year 21, I think.
I haven't been doing anything for 20 years. And that, like, you've been doing this career for 20 years.
Yeah, sometimes I'll tell people, I'll ask them, like, if they've loved anything for 20 years. Like, so most people, they don't spend 20 years of their life doing any one thing at all. So it's weird to me. I can't remember what life was like before packing a bag and going to an airport, you know, every week. So, yeah, it's weird.
Have you ever thought of, like, Vegas is not exactly the best location to wrestle indies within the U.S.
No, not.
Have you ever thought of relocating?
Well, you know.
Because this is home for you now.
Yeah, yeah. And that's only in recent years. But I do have a home in Los Angeles. All my family is still there. So I split my time back and forth. I'm only 3 hours away from where I grew up, which is in Riverside, just outside of L.A. Wrestling out there is great. Wrestling out here is a lot slower. And I don't know. I just, you know, as long as I have an airport. And the way that the indies and everything is, it's not just like mainstream wrestling, but even with the indies, like, if you can travel and you can get there, like, the business models are a lot better for some of these places. Yeah. So guys are doing a lot better. And, like, individual wrestlers are, like, being able to, like, you know, kind of brand themselves and be in command of their own business better than they were before. Like,
yeah.
Like, everybody's full-on entrepreneurs now. So, you know, as long as it's not like, like, when I started in 1998... it was like you had to write down directions on like a piece of paper.
Yes.
And you literally had to drive to all your shows because they weren't interconnected in that way. There's no social media. You had no idea of other wrestlers on the other coast. You just word of mouth. And maybe if you got a VHS tape of them, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like I remember being in LA and hearing about like Amazing Red or like Loki, but you didn't even know what they looked like. In my head, Amazing Red was like a 6 foot tall, lean, like crazy athlete, and in real life he's like Rey Mysterio Jr. but Puerto Rican, and like
I haven't heard that before.
Yeah, and he's an amazing athlete, and so, you know, but it was like the legend of people would grow, you know, same thing with like Loki, and then, you know, so at that time it was different. You really did have to get in the car and car hop and get around. That's how I used to have to do it when I was, you know, 13, 14. I'd just hop in the back of cars and drive wherever I could get. Phoenix, San Francisco, San Diego, you know, Vegas, the Bay Area, whatever.
How would these promoters be okay with bringing on someone who's 13, 14 years old?
Oh man, it was the Wild West back then. If you could get in the ring, then they'll let you do it. Yeah, that's
like you look like a kid now. What did you look like at 13? Like an infant?
Like a kid, yeah. I had to wear a mask, you know, at the start. That helped out a lot. But, you know, I mean, just if you were good, they let you do it. But keep in mind, this is at a time when, like, you know, if you rub people the wrong way, then they kicked your ass. If you didn't get along with somebody, then they just kicked your ass. Like, that, it was just, that was the way wrestling was at that time. Now, if we see that, it's crazy because the world is a lot more progressive and protective now. So, we kind of shun those people. And maybe that's even worse in some ways. I don't know. But, like, at that time, there was, like, no rules. Like, it was more passively governed. So, you know, you could do that. I guess, you know, the strong survive in that way. So, if you can handle it, then you could make it work. Now it's a lot more streamlined of a system.
Sure. After doing this for 15-ish plus years before WWE called, did you think, like, it's not going to happen? Because obviously that's the goal when you're a wrestler. You want to work for WWE.
It wasn't really on my bucket list anymore. Like, even at the time that I did it, I didn't think I was, like, when we did the tournament, I didn't think I was going to stay for WWE. Like, they hadn't offered me anything. I thought I'd maybe do a round and leave or something like that. And I wanted to kind of, I just got out of TNA. I kind of wanted to just go back to Japan, go back to Mexico. My heart is really in those places, especially Mexico, because I came up in Lucha Libre. So, like, I really wanted to do that. So I wasn't really even thinking about WWE. I just knew the tournament would be, like, this generation's Jacob. I had the foresight to see that at least that would be kind of an important moment in time. Because coming out of TNA, I started to see how the X division, like when I was in like 04, 05, 06, for like teenagers that were just getting into wrestling, I would meet them, you know, again like 10 years later. So then, you know, I would see them again in like 2016, 2015 or something like that. I'd do a meet and greet or something, and they would talk about us, me, Alex Shelley, guys like that, the way that, like, we used to, like, look up to, like, Guerrero and, like, those guys in WCW because it was, like, Ray, you know, and it was weird, but to them, that's what that was. So then I started to kind of take stock of, like, certain landmarks in history, like, how that affects people. So when I saw the tournament, I was like, okay, this is going to be something important, but after that, I don't know. I kind of had my fill of WWE doing some dark matches when I was like 21, and I spent some time in FCW. I walked on there. I was in UPW when I was like a young teen, like with Cena. Like I was in Cena's class.
Wow. The prototype, of course.
Yeah, the prototype. Yeah. With the crew cut and everything. And Victoria was there. So that was enough for me. Like, I had wrestled in front of a WWE crowd in a WWE ring and stuff and walked through that curtain. So I was like, by the time the Cruiserweight Classic came around, I was like, I don't care if I have this necessarily. You know, but it just felt like the right thing at the right time. And Regal was one that really kind of talked me into it. So I didn't really think about staying necessarily. I wasn't even under contract when I won the title.
Really?
Yeah, I could have went like Medusa on it, but.
When they booked you for the Cruiserweight Classic, did they specifically tell you, we're bringing you in and you're going to win?
Not when they brought me in, but after round one, they asked me who I wanted to wrestle in the finals.
Wow.
So I knew then that I was going to go to the end.
And did you pick Grand Metalik?
They gave me a choice between him or Zach, and I chose Zach. Sorry. sorry, Dorada. I think they thought about it in like a stylistic sort of way, and like Zach and I are really alike. That's why I chose that, and I'm good friends with Zach. I'm good friends with Metalik too. So I really couldn't have gone wrong, but I think to them it was like, it wasn't just going to be two catch wrestling guys together. And
Zach was eliminated relatively early for the skill set that he has.
Yeah. And I don't know that they, for guys that are pure and traditional in the sense that he is for our style, like I don't know if the WWE system understands how to showcase that.
Yeah.
So in Zach's case, there's sometimes I felt for him because I was like, they would put him in positions where, not that he was a fish out of water, but they didn't give him the type of stage, I think, to show how awesome he really is. But in my case, like, I have a different flavor to the way I approach it. So You know, it gets dressed up a little differently. And then I think they really liked the match. You know, styles make fights. So I think they just liked the match with me and Metalik. But, you know, doing two almost half-hour matches 10 minutes apart from each other with two guys with serious language and style barriers is a little bit taxing, but
I'm always so fascinated how you're able to call a match with someone who doesn't speak English.
Well, I mean, I spent so much time in the places where they came from, you know, like when I was in CMLL, I was going to say Metalik was just a kid in the gym, but I don't think he'd even started yet. But I came up and spent time in the system that created him. So I know, like, I know him, like I could like be him in my head when we're in there. And same thing with Kota, you know, and especially with how much time he spent in New Japan recently, and like they have a system of the way they do things, and there's a certain tempo to it. And I they were the first team that drafted me, so I grew up in that system. So same thing, like I could just feel where his mind is going to go. So I think, in a way, not that it was intended like this, but I think it cosmically I was kind of built to be there on that night, like, because like that sort of position, I don't think anybody else could have done it as well, because I was able to be there for both guys, and I think I was able to get the best out of them for those two matches, especially back to back.
WWE's often been criticized for taking someone who has an exciting style like yours and watering it down. Do you feel like that happened?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. The system itself doesn't seek to do that. But I think sometimes you run into certain producers that will. Like, it's more of an individual thing. I don't think it's a systematic thing. Like, our 205 producer was sort of like that. Like, he would gravitate towards some other. So some guys would get a lot of leeway, some guys wouldn't. And then that limits a lot of guys. And then a few guys that he kind of handpicks for his brass ring, they flourish, obviously, because their starting line is, like, right in front of the brass ring. And then other guys' starting line is way back behind the finish
line. And that's where you were?
Sometimes that's where I was. Yeah. Like, I remember having, I had a match with Grand Metalik in L.A. once, and they said you can't let him come off the ropes more than once. You can't let him exit the ring more than once. And I was like, his name is the King of the Ropes.
Yeah.
You're literally paying him to do those things. He's probably the most talented high flyer the company's ever had, and I have to go in the next room and tell him he can't use the ropes. Like, that's how it would be on some nights. But then I would watch other matches are doing Spanish flies off the guardrail and like four dives and all kinds of stuff, and I'm like, all right, well, I guess we'll make the best of the tools you gave us. But yeah, so it's not a system thing. I just think it's an individual thing. Some guys perceive the business a certain way, so they'll call it a certain way, or they play favorites or whatever, just like anywhere in life, you know. But you deal with it, and you get through it as best you can.
After being in the business now for 20-plus years, do you still have dream matches, or have you wrestled everyone you want?
I've mostly wrestled everybody I want, but, I mean, I was asked this recently. I feel like, If I had to pick a guy in a place, I might pick Ray in Tokyo.
Have you ever worked Ray?
Once. And it was actually, I think, other than the first AAA appearance he did when he was released, it was like his first other match. We had a little tag match. And I know Ray a little bit, and I know his son and stuff. His son's going to be really good. His son's a heavyweight. Kind of reminds me of like Tien Eblas or something like that. And I wouldn't have picked that like years and years ago. I've always loved Ray, but I never thought about like wrestling in like a dream match. But now, just because of where he is and how timeless he is and how good he is, you know, like I just feel like that would be, and because of the performer I've become, I feel like that would be my dream match. Maybe that's still left, because a lot of guys have already checked off the bucket list. Like Jeff Hardy was on it for a while. I got to do that in TNA, and that was pretty cool. That was awesome. You know, so there's stuff like that that has come and gone. But some of my friends and stuff who you know, I've waited to wrestle for a long time, but I think Ray would be up there.
Since you're in Vegas for like a day and you're going to be at StarCast, are you going to be watching Double or Nothing?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, like if you like wrestling and you're not watching it, like
Do you really like wrestling?
Yeah. I feel like that. Like you answer your own question if you ask yourself, "Do I like wrestling?" and you're not going to watch it. Of course, you know they. I joke with my friends that it's like they gave us WCW back, and I say that just because of the time that I came up. Like I'm old enough to have. It was a realistic goal for me to try to go to the first cruiserweight division because like I came up in '98, so like, what Jericho was like the cruiserweight champion and like. You know, if I was a little older at that time, then it's like, okay, in a couple of years, if I'm good enough, I might be able to go to actual WCW in the cruiserweight. So, like, it's exciting to me that there's an alternative, like, of that capacity that has come back. And, you know, obviously there's, like, a lot of, you know, patterning after that business model. And I always thought that that was an amazing time for wrestling and that was an amazing place. So, you know.
But some people, some wrestling fans will look at someone saying, oh, it's WCW as a bad thing.
Well,
because of what WCW became.
So it's funny because when I say, oh, they gave us WCW back, my friends and I joke that it's actually, it is that, but it's flipped. Like WWE is now WCW.
Wow.
Because of the way the narrative is, you know? And I don't know, it's hard to compare because like the world is such a different place now and TV distribution is so different. The business is totally different. But yeah, that's the second part of the joke is like, I say they gave us WCW back and then my friends chime in and say, yeah, but it's the other way around now. And we're like, yeah, it kind of is.
The business has changed so much and people probably saw the headlines this week that you're making more money on the indies than you ever did in WWE.
Yeah, I am. I mean, I'm not like...
I'm not like a billionaire like The Rock?
No, I wish. I might double it, but I don't.
Wow.
I don't know if I'll quite double it. So it's not like I'm like, not like a millionaire overnight or anything. But I am making significantly more.
And you're your own boss.
Yeah. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's bad. I spend a lot of time at my desk in the office in my house, and that kind of sucks. I became a wrestler so I wouldn't have to sit at a desk. And now I sit at a desk all day long waiting for the next like tour date to come up. So I'm like, God, can I get 3 or 4 shows in a row again? Yes, I'm going, you know, in a couple of days, but then I'll be home for like a day or two and I'm like, oh, I'm at my desk like
but you're piggybacking
like,
them all.
On the phone and just writing notes and on the whiteboard and like stuff like that. Which I mean it's great because if I wasn't busy I'd be miserable, but you know, there's a certain part of that. You're miserable anyway because you're, like, just so busy.
But you're piggybacking your dates one, you know, on top of another, right?
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, I have...
Like, you're getting promoters to fly you from one booking to the next booking to the next booking.
Yeah, it's almost like... I was telling, like, some of my friends that are still in WWE, I was telling them, it's like I'm still doing house show loops. I just don't do TV every week. So, because like I was one of the cruiserweights that was lucky enough to do a lot of house show loops because of where I was like coming in, and you know there's only so many cruiserweight spots for those, so I did a lot of those for a while, for the Raw brand, and so some of them like my friends that are like on like house show loops, I'll tell them I'm like guys, it's like I'm just doing house show loops, but I'm just not at TV on Monday. That's all.
Did your release come as a surprise to you?
No, I had thought about leaving. As far back as maybe November, December, I was kind of asking my friends like different situations, and I kind of wanted to maybe.
We got a knock at the door. Yeah. They're definitely gonna come in. I'm gonna hold on. We're good right now. Thank you. It's okay. Should have put up the do not disturb sign. We'll leave that in. Why not?
Housekeeping. She wants to know how it was. I thought about leaving maybe as far back as November, December. I had asked some of my friends and stuff like different places, and there was just a lot of things I was unhappy not being able to do. And I felt like I wasn't a commodity to Vince anymore. I knocked on his door a year ago in London. And I remember telling him just, because I always had a good one-on-one relationship with him. I've knocked on his door and talked to him anytime I wanted to. I think most people are just afraid of his door. You know, he's a great guy. Mm. It's just his door kind of sucks for people because if they're like the intimidated type. But I'm not like that. And I always had a good relationship with him. So I knocked on his door and I told him, I don't feel like as I am right now, I'm a commodity to you. And he asked me, how can we use you better? And I told him, well, I'll show you. And I spent the year making my own appearances, doing like Filipino events and red carpets and charity work and stuff like that. I would do interviews and like for different media outlets. I worked out with Manny Pacquiao and just different stuff like that. Went to awards galas and different things. And I did a lot of research on like the demographics of like my community and like put together like little packages and got with influencer groups to see like, so that Vince could see like, their impact just as a community and like what they do for like boxing for Manny and stuff like that. And groups that would do like, say, like if you go to a Golden State Warriors game and it's like Filipino Heritage Night or something like that, and it's like first, you know, however many people through the door get a special Warriors shirt with like the Filipino sun on it. Like groups like that were like all linking up with me and like, hey, let's show WWE and let's show Vince what we can do.
Yeah.
And I told him this is what my value is to you. You know, when I came in, Hunter had me positioned as a Filipino superstar and I had a community. They reached out to me. Like overnight I got like 500,000 followers on social media, and like I think even to this day maybe none of the cruiserweights even caught up to that. Just I had the perfect platform that was unique to me. But when we got to Raw, I was separated from that. So I told him I wanted to get back to that, and he said, great. We tried to think of ideas to get me on a platform where it would work for, I think it was Raw. And they just didn't, just too many guys, and he didn't see where it would be a good fit. And so, you know, there was a lot of stuff, you know, because of the way WWE is, it's restrictive. So I was like, you know, I couldn't do influencer work, couldn't take sponsorships, couldn't do stuff that was now available to me through my community and stuff like that. Couldn't start like my own merch line or whatever. Like I wanted to start a streetwear line and just a lot of stuff that I couldn't do. And so I was starting to think maybe I'd be happier if I just went back to Japan and did, or went back to Mexico and did my own thing for a while. So maybe like November, December, I started thinking about it. And then over the next like several months, they kind of knew that I was ready to quit, but I would never really quit on anybody because I just don't believe in that. So once it got to the point where they're like, look, we don't want to waste your time and we don't want you to sit on the bench, it was that we just kind of had that conversation. And it was like, so it wasn't really a surprise, but it wasn't like I didn't like kick a door and say I'm out of here, like, you know, I would never do that, but they kind of knew that maybe it was time to go. So
you are a massive star in the Philippines. I think people need to realize this, like your Filipino fan base is huge. What's the difference like when you go over there? How different is it?
It's weird. Like, there's a following there, but like there's a following in a lot of different places. You know, I don't know. Like, I must have like had FaceTime at the right time with WWE fans at a time when it was like, because you know it goes in up and down trends, and you see it. You go to like house shows and stuff, and like when I first got in, I would do like house shows or like show up at TVs, and there's like 1,000 people waiting outside the arena hours before the show, and I was getting a lot of FaceTime at that time, so I became synonymous with what they viewed as part of WWE. Mm-hmm. Then later on, you know, maybe like 6 months, 8 months later, you would go to shows and there'd be like 30 people outside. So you kind of see like, okay, now it's kind of a downtrend for like their like interactivity, I guess, you know. And so I would get recognized in different places, but in the Philippines, it's like, I mean, I would go board a flight. Like I boarded a flight to go back to LA, and they asked if I could come off. I thought I was in trouble or something. And I came out and all the gate agents from all over the Manila airport had gathered to take pictures of me. And that's,
you put that on Instagram.
Yeah.
I saw that.
So that was like most of the things I thought was normal. Like people maybe catch up with me in a hotel or something like that. I mean, it's not like I'm Pacquiao. Like Manny has thousands of people following him everywhere he goes. But like that one particular moment was a little bit, that was like, okay, this one's a little crazy. Like, this one maybe gives me a different sense of how they perceive me, because I've never had that happen before. Because that's weird. Like, but I mean, it was really cool that they take me in, because there's a lot of Filipino artists in different platforms. You know, musicians and athletes. There's other pro wrestlers too. Not a lot, but there's a few. But they don't latch onto the community that much. You know, we all looked up to Dave, we all looked up to Batista, but he doesn't claim it as directly as maybe I do. So a lot of times, like, the community maybe doesn't realize that there are like some of us representing in different ways. So I always made it a point to represent them as much as I could so that I could help build that bridge, and hopefully other people would follow suit. So other Filipino Americans or Filipinos of you know, any kind of mix or anything will represent and do the same thing and kind of, you know, motivate the community.
If you were to break it down, what's the biggest difference in wrestling in Ring of Honor versus TNA versus WWE?
Probably the micromanagement level. There's a lot of micromanagement on the WWE level. So it feels more like you're shooting a live movie or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like a one take movie is like how it feels. Because at any one time, from the start of your day till the end of it, you kind of have like half a dozen people following you in some way, either on a headset or physically, and they're telling you what to do and when. So that's how it is, like the moment you walk through the door. It's like you have three or four people telling you to tape this, and then as you're taping it, there's three or four people behind the camera telling you, like directing you as you're doing it. And then when you're gonna go to the ring, like there's three or four people sending you off through the curtain. Then when you're out there, you know, all the camera guys are signaling you with their hands, and the referee's telling you, so like you're kind of viewing you're almost like a fan of your own match because it's not yours anymore. That it's a crazy level of micromanagement there, but other places you have a little bit more freedom, and then that changes. Each place is a little bit more different. Ring of Honor has such a pure feel to it, you know, like a lot of wrestlers gravitate there because it has such a pure feel to it. I always felt like Impact and TNA was like kind of like the ECW supplement, because a lot of the guys had a lot of fun there, and it's always been great camaraderie there, and it's sort of a wild card. Like there's not a lot of micromanagement, but it could be kind of crazy sometimes.
So you're obviously busier than ever, making a lot of money now with independent wrestling. What else do you have going on? Well, you've got your apparel company.
Yeah, yeah. So I have.
If you move your necklace, we can all see it. There it is.
Detonation Kick. Yeah. I wasn't really big on branding my name because I'm not that big on me, and I wanted to start a streetwear thing, so I started this.
You're wearing your name around your neck, though.
Yeah. Well, this was given to me by a fan, actually, outside of Staples Center, so I've always kind of felt like this was a thing that I was, like, a keepsake of some sort. So, you know, I have this, and then I have another fashion line that's coming out through Loop-Defy, which is a social media platform that I'm on. I'm co-writing two horror movies. I'm going to start off with shorts, but hopefully we can make them into feature length.
Are you going to be in them too?
They asked if I would, but I don't know. I acted when I was a little kid. My mom wanted me to be an actor. I had a Screen Actors Guild card and everything, but I just would read for some movies. I did some commercials, and that was like it. My heart wasn't in it. So I don't know if I'd be any good at it now, but maybe. They asked if I would, but right now I'm having fun just writing it and putting concepts down on paper.
Can you give us the premise of one of your horror films?
Well, one I actually wrote when I was like 19, because I had a coach that did, he wrote a lot for TV and movies, and he told me, he was like, it's a good practice to get into, because, you know, you never know, like, what you might get into later in life if you have an opportunity to produce something. So I had written a couple things. One of them was one I'm working on now. And the premise, I wrote it because I would do these trips where I'd drive. When I was like 16, I first could start driving myself. I would do these shows in San Francisco, and I'd drive all the way from LA to San Francisco. It's a 6-hour drive. So I'd drive up, and I remember a few times I would drive up, get there just in time to get dressed and wrestle, and then I don't have any other plan but to just get back in the car and go home.
Sure.
So I'd be in the car 6 hours, I'd be in the ring for 13 minutes, and then I would change and get back in the car for 6 hours, and then go home. So you'd be driving on the 5, overnight, and it's nothing, you know. So I had written this concept of a guy that his personal purgatory was actually that road, and it just goes on forever, and eventually there's nobody else on the road with him. He doesn't know when he ended up on it, and he's trying to piece together like when his life ended and how he ended up there and how he can get off this road that never ends.
This is deep.
Yeah. So that was one concept that I had that I I'm working on. And then the other one I wanted to make, like, because I'm a big horror movie guy, so.
Yeah, this is a Jason mask here.
Yeah, I got this slasher-type hockey mask to commemorate Canada. These are all landmarks of my career and places I've been. So the other one, I wanted to do kind of a monster movie, so I wanted to do one on the Aswang in Filipino folklore. It's kind of like our werewolf, vampire, ghoul, witch type thing. The premise for that is like a group of travelers, foreign travelers. Some are Filipino and some are mixed, and the group is split up in a regional airport delay in the Philippines. Which, if you've traveled out of the country and you've been to regional airports, especially in like Asia, like some of those towns are like archaic, you know.
Yeah.
So then, like, so insert local folklore monster there to terrorize them. So that's the loose premise of how that would kind of get them there. But
you really are the poor man's Rock. I mean that in the best possible way.
Did we say that on camera? Was that off?
That's
camera?
What you said on camera.
Did we say at the start? Yeah. I feel like the poor man's Rock sometimes. I got my hands in all these different things.
Rock's producing movies.
And yeah, but I'm not a billionaire like him.
He's not a billionaire yet.
He should be.
I'm sure he will be one day.
Yeah.
All right, where can people find you?
I guess now I have three social medias.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But everything is under @MegaTJP. And then Dead Nation Kick, the social media is under that. You can find updates for my brand line. And then DeadNationKick.com has the actual online shop. Everything is up there for order now. There should be updates pretty soon. I'm working on curating a women's line for it and some other summer items. And that has my touring schedule on detonationkick.com, so you can find pretty much everything that's coming up through @MegaTJP on almost anything you click on, or detonationkick.com.
All right, CVV with TJP. Thank you.
Thanks, brother.
There it is, CVV and TJP, and TJ Perkins is just crushing it on the indie scene. It's amazing that he's making almost twice as much as he was in WWE, working for himself now. What a talented guy who can work with like pretty much anyone, any style. Big thanks to Green Roads, and make sure you use the code CHRIS15 to get 15% off your order at greenroadsworld.com. Also, thanks to Samson Technologies for providing us with the equipment to make the Chris Van Vliet Show possible. And I really like that quote from the start of the show, so I'm going to say it one more time just so, you know, it sticks with you today. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now. Boom! Have a great day.